welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic today is understanding the changing labor market. Is it threats or is it opportunities, and how to get over these? As a job seeker, we know that you're concerned about job security, yet we also know because of recent economic changes and the outsourcing of jobs overseas and even the rapid pace of advances in technology, there are so many things in a state of flux that are changing all the rules. Today's show is designed to give you an edge so that your job and your job search are well planned to ensure your future success. To help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by a special guest, George Dutch, out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, George.
Hello, John.
Good to have you on our show. I think we're going to have quite a bit to share with our listeners.
I'm sure we will, and I'm happy to be back once again.
Yes. Now, George has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992, and that's well over 20 years. His career transition company is entitled Job Joy. He hosts his own weekly radio show entitled Career Connection. And George also does consulting for Fortune 500 companies, all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. He has authored two publications, Job Joy and Job Boot Camp. For the first 30 minutes of our show, George and I will talk about our topic, understanding the changing labor market, the threats, and the opportunities. And we will then take a short break and begin to answer your job hunting questions. So, George, let's just jump into this topic. I think that most anyone that wants to continue to pay their mortgage and take care of their family and move ahead in their career have a concern about all the factors that seem to be gnawing and chipping and chiseling away at job security. We all seek job security, but it's a whole new playing field than it was 20 years ago. And so we want to equip our listener to get ahead, to work their way through the maze so they don't feel like a victim, or even worse, feel insecure every day they go to work that they might do something that would cause disfavor with the employer and end up with a pink slip. So, George, can you outline some of the trends that you're seeing that are, in a sense, changing the face of the labor market?
Sure. I think the first thing to say, John, is that job security is a relatively new phenomenon in the world of work. It's really part of the post-World War II boom that we've enjoyed in North America, kind of job for life as North America industrialized after World War II. And it has led, of course, to the affluence and high standard of living that we've enjoyed here for the last 50 years. Now it looks like the job security and the boom is moving offshore, especially over to Asia, where they are industrializing, and they're going to enjoy relative prosperity probably for the next 50 years. So there are mega trends that occur in our economy, and then there are trends that are more localized or regionalized. So one of the mega trends that you've already alluded to is that a lot of the IT knowledge-based jobs that drove our economy, the last boom we had 15, 20 years ago in IT, the telecom and the high-tech manufacturing sectors, a lot of that work and those jobs have moved offshore to Asia, China, India largely, to the, what I call the brainiac countries, because there is 7 billion people in that part of the world. The education systems there focus on math and sciences, so that provides tremendous competition for us here in North America for knowledge-based jobs.
Let me jump in there. Now, when we talk about this outsourcing, are we talking about United States companies finding cheaper labor, educated labor, or are we talking about actual company startups in these foreign countries that are competing neck to neck with our own very same type of company.
We're talking about both, of course, because a lot of our largest Fortune 500 companies that are based in IT, like Apple and Microsoft and whatnot, we know that they're moving a lot of their operations over to Asia to take advantage of the labor pool there, the educated labor pool. But also, as those countries industrialize, because they have large internal markets, you know, China's got billions of consumers, they start to build companies and compete with our own here in North America. So they start to actually export to North America and compete with the companies that have led our economy for decades.
Yeah, so even if our companies find a way to more economically hire U.S., there is a new phenomenon, and that is a much more educated and competitive market coming from China and India and perhaps other Asian, South Korea, Taiwan, some of these countries that have really geared up in the last 20 years.
No doubt about it. That's certainly a mega trend. One of the more local or regionalized trends is we're all aware of the hollowing out of our manufacturing sector in the heartland of America and in central Canada. Many, many manufacturing jobs have moved south to Central and South America, as well as overseas to Asia and Europe. So people that live in the heartland of America, it's now called or alluded to as the Rust Belt, have experienced tremendous downsizing of workforces that for decades were the economic engine of our economy.
Well, let's take a look at some older workers. What are the trends you're seeing there?
Yes, well, we're all aware that demographics drives a lot of labor supply and demand. And, of course, we have been in a negative birth rate here in North America since 1970, but so has the rest of the Western world. We forget that we're competing for educated labor and for labor, not only with ourselves here in, you know, between Canada, the United States, but also with Europe and Russia and other countries, South Africa, that have industrialized over the last 50 years. We're competing with them, Scandinavian countries. We're all looking for skilled labor for a younger workforce. And so what's happened is that we can't attract all the younger workers that we need for to work in our institutions and in our factories and so on. So what's happened is that older workers have a higher premium. Employers are hiring older workers not for entry-level jobs. They can hire younger people for those jobs, but for leadership, management, middle management type jobs, there's a trend showing up in our economy in many sectors of our economy that older workers are back in demand as employers hunt for experience.
And you're labeling older workers as 50, 45, 50 plus, is that right?
That's right. And one of the fastest growing sectors of older workers, believe it or not, is 60 to 65.
Well, there's no question about that, because the whole issue of health and fitness, today's 65 is yesteryear's 45. So this whole idea of retirement at 65, there's so many, many that are, in a sense, retiring, but they're moving on to a second career. So it sounds to me, George, like there is a positive in terms of trends for the older worker, that employers are seeing the value of a seasoned person that has a good work history, has strong character, that they appear to be responsible and knowledgeable, and they are now a desired commodity rather than what used to be considered, well, if you're old, you're out.
Yes, that's very true. So many older workers have acquired over the years a lot of corporate knowledge, a lot of intelligence about work. They have a strong work ethic. They have many of the attributes that you just alluded to. And workers are starting to view older workers through that lens, that they have much higher value than they thought of maybe 10 or 20 years ago. It's not just about learning or knowing technology, because older workers have demonstrated they can learn new technologies. But it's unlikely that they will go through that revolving door of learning new technologies every 2, 3, or 5 years. But they still have a lot of value other than technological skills. That's what employers are discovering.
Yes. Now, if a person's watching the unemployment figures during the crunch in the economy, I think they're getting a picture of sort of a fickle market. We'll pick up that the stock market's going up and employers are hiring, and then we'll turn around, stock market is down and employers are not hiring. Are you seeing any factors that would cause us to predict that in 6 months, 12 months or so, the trend is going to return back to more demand for workers in the labor force?
I wish that I could predict such things, John. You know, if we could predict the markets and labor supply and demand, we could all probably make a lot more money. But as recent events have shown in the last 20 years, it's very difficult to predict which way the economy is going to go and which way the labor market's going to go. That relative stability that we've enjoyed for the last 50 years since World War II has really been deconstructed by these global economic trends. And in doing so, it's become very hard to predict which way labor demand is going to go. What we can predict is that it will change. It will go up and down, no doubt about
it.
But this steady increase, this steady, stable increase for labor supply, it's unlikely to be such a one track anymore, steadily going up. We're going to see a lot of fluctuations, a lot of instability in labor supply and demand.
Now, George, you and I are talking about these trends, and the listener is going to start feeling doom and gloom. But we need to say we haven't hit the story is not over yet. We have some very, very important good news that we want to share with the listener on how to get ahead of this and how to succeed, even though in the global economy things are not exactly the way we want. George, let's turn the corner and talk about trends that are shaped by personal preferences and behaviors and beliefs.
Yes, I think it's important to understand that there are trends that are driven by external factors. We just talked about those, largely global and economic factors. But there are also trends that are driven by internal factors, internal preferences, behaviors, beliefs. You know, for many years, people believed that work was a necessary evil. That work was supposed to be, it was supposed to hurt. You're supposed to put your nose to the grindstone and just get on with it, collect your paycheck, and live for the weekends. A lot of that has changed. That value system or that belief system has changed. People want more out of their job than just a paycheck in most cases now. And we see this show up in statistics. Gallup poll suggests that over 75% of the full-time workers in America, and there's over 150 million of us, are emotionally disengaged at work. And this causes a big problem in the workplace in terms of disability and sick days and productivity issues. So if you believe that work is supposed to hurt, you become less tolerant of it as the values in society change of job dissatisfaction. You become less tolerant, and so you want a better job fit. And it can create a lot of problems in terms of motivation and productivity in the workplace. This is one.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that this may be one of the reasons that Gallup has also suggested that over 90% of individuals fantasize about changing their careers or jobs because there's a lot of dissatisfaction, because people are emotionally disengaged at work. They really do fantasize about having another job.
Let's pick this up after the break, George.
Sure.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give meaning and purpose to their life.
So, John, what about boomers, those who are approaching retirement age? There are a lot of us out there.
That's right, Evan, many millions. We provide very specific help to boomers and their families.
You mean that the choice what to do after retirement is just as important as selecting one's career at 20 years of age?
Well, Evan, think on this. Let's say you've been grinding it out, just waiting for that 25-year goal pin. And now that's where you are. Does that mean your life of significance and purpose ends? You have heard that the new 65 is the old 45. A person still has 10, 15, maybe 20 more productive years ahead of them.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Well, we help adults, many adults, find that ideal post-retirement career. For once, they don't have to be trapped into their occupation. They can be free to choose to give it back to make a difference.
But John, why couldn't a mid-30s person choose to do that?
Well, they most certainly can, and I hope they will. But some of us have been so close to the grindstone of work that we have never considered looking into the future of making a difference or giving back.
Okay, John. I want to discuss this further, that is, considering a purpose for what we do beyond a paycheck and benefits. Can we talk some more about this during the next break?
Sure, you bet.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada, our neighbor to the north. And George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio on our website. Our topic is understanding the challenging and changing labor market, the threats, the opportunities that come from this. And we're trying to peel the onion and get to the heart of this so that you can have confidence that there's plenty of room for growth and advancement. You do not have to be a victim. And George, just before the break, we were talking about personal preferences, behaviors, and beliefs that tend to bring about some of these trends. And you were talking about the earlier tradition of viewing work as nose to the grindstone, and you just put up with it and collect your gold watch at retirement and then get on to the real you and the real life, and how that's evolved to where people are seeking value, meaning, and purpose in their job. And quite a startling statistic here. You mentioned that you found 90% of individuals fantasize about changing their careers to find something more of value and purpose, but only 5% act on this. Only 5% seek to really make a change. Before you jump into that, I want to throw out another statistic that is a trend. A report that I read that startled me about the future shared that 65% of grade school students, kids in fifth and sixth grade, will eventually work in jobs that don't even exist today. Isn't that, that's just mind-boggling. So we have all these factors that are just stirring up the pot. And then we have individuals that are saying, boy, I really wish I could be doing something else. And then we're down to 5% really do something about it. Now, what you and I are saying for those 5%, yes, you can do something. You can land on your feet. You can have a meaningful and very purpose-driven life. So, George, take us on that journey about how to get ahead of this morass of gloom and doom news that causes individuals to feel insecure. Therefore, they grab on a hang-on, almost like the ship has gone down. All you've got left is a life jacket and maybe a floating piece of wood or a half-sunk lifeboat, and you're just hanging on to that. how can we get back on the boat again and ensure that it's always going to be floating and get us to home port?
Yes, I think one of the first things we have to do is suspend the assumptions that are driving our current decision making, that it's all gloom and doom out there. We have to remember that we live in one of the richest societies in history. There are plenty of opportunities. We live in one of the largest economies in the world. There are lots of opportunities represented by the fact that, as you and I both know, there's up to 90,000 different job titles operating in our economy, and that number, 90,000, represents a huge number of opportunities. Not only that, as you just mentioned, new jobs are being created every day. There are jobs, in 5 years, jobs will exist that didn't exist today, that don't exist today.
Mm-hmm.
So the economy is always changing. It doesn't mean it's changing for the worst. Our assumption is that it is changing for the worse. We have a fear of negative consequences. We think things are getting worse. And there's lots of news out there and gossip that reinforces this false notion that things are getting worse all the time, when in fact, if you look at it statistically or realistically, things are getting better in many respects. They may not stay the same. That's the thing that's hard to get used to, is that things won't stay the same. For example, 25 years ago, the opportunity was in IT, in those knowledge-based IT jobs, and everybody said that's the future, and everybody went back to school to get computer science and related degrees because the future was in IT jobs. Now those jobs are rapidly disappearing, many of them overseas to Asia, but new jobs in IT are being created every day. And that is the trend. That's what we're going to see, is that for every door that closes, another door or two opens. So we have to become...
George, yeah, let me jump in on something that you and I have talked about previously. Your comment just reminds me of something I hear a fair amount with individuals that are at a mid-career place and they're thinking about changing direction, or they're a recent college grad or a student that is planning to return to school to acquire skills. And the question is, what are the skills of tomorrow that I should learn today? And, you know, that question really bothers me, because someone that asks that question is already headed down the wrong road. And if you follow the logic, someone that asks that question is basically committing their life to market demand. And we know that the market is changing. And so if you invest your life in IT and the skills related, you become a slave to that. What if you're a gifted artist or musician? What happened to that? Because we know as you get older, you will be more and more frustrated. There'll be more mistakes and accidents and oversights, and you will not achieve a sense of purpose and vision doing something you're not wired to do. And so we do need to be careful in trying to offset these trends to avoid saying, well, looks like this industry is moving, so I'm going to go that way just because it will give me greater job security, not satisfaction, but security. Well, that security is going to change. And that brings us back to, why don't we talk about the path? How can one chart a path that is always going to lead to the gold and lead someone to the promised land, so to speak, of fulfillment and employability?
Well, I think my personal belief, based on 20 years of working with people making career changes, is to focus on the nature of work that you most enjoy doing and that you're best suited doing. Because work is not going to disappear. There's always work that needs to be done. It may not be configured into the specific job title that you're most used to. For example, if you really enjoy teaching and you have natural talents as a teacher and you love teaching, you may lose your public school job because of demographics. We're closing schools. People aren't having enough babies. But that doesn't mean that the demand for your skill as a teacher is going to disappear. There are many other opportunities to teach. You might end up teaching in corporations. Many large Fortune 500 companies are setting up their own internal campuses, their own basic universities, in-house universities, and teaching.
And they've had those for years. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. You might teach overseas in the Middle East, English as a second language, or go to Asia and teach English as a second language. Many people that are trained as teachers are very good marketers because they're very good. They have strong persuasive and convincing skills, and they can convince people to try new products or services. They have strong promotional skills, not necessarily selling skills. So there's always work that aligns with your talents and your preferences and your strengths. And understanding the work that you're suited to actually opens up lots of other career options that you may feel boxed in by just thinking of yourself in terms of your current job title.
Yeah. And one thing, George, as we acknowledge these statistics, now we can quibble about 5 and 10% of this and that, depending on who did the survey. But for many years, we have been reading that the large majority of the general population is not happy, they're dissatisfied, and perhaps just outraged at the job or the working conditions that they are involved in. They want to get out. And this most recent statistic that you quoted, only 5% of people do anything about it. Most just get used to the fact of, I've got this gangrene that's just driving me crazy, but at least it's a paycheck. Well, if we turn that statistic around and we talk to the 5%, if someone is brave enough to choose something that they do well, something they're naturally wired to do, we know that they'll rise to the top because of two things. One, they intuitively get it, the thing they're doing, in your case, the example of teaching, they intuitively get it. And every year they do it, they intuitively keep getting better, 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 so that in 5 years, 10 years, they are 10, 20, 30% better than their colleagues who are not intuitively wired and gifted. Now, a person who's really moving in a direction of how they're wired is going to be set apart by the employer as a keeper, as someone that they, if everything falls apart, there's one person that we do not want to lose, and that's so-and-so. Every time we turn around, so-and-so has what it takes to make this department, this product, this program, this service go. And so it's only wise. And so we're turning the statistics around. That means that the 90% or the 80% that are dissatisfied, that means they're not doing what their hard wiring is about. You've eliminated the competition for the future that you want because there's only 5% that are pursuing something that really fits their values, their gifting, their wiring. It's a whole new ball game. George, any comments on that?
Oh, I think that's very wise what you just said. So much of the workplace is characterized by mediocre performance and people that excel at something because they're using their natural talents and strengths. That is recognized by employers and rewarded, because the benchmark is usually very mediocre performance. So people that excel at something, they will stand out above the pack without a doubt.
Yeah, and these trends aren't going to happen in a sense overnight. You're not going to wake up and something's going to snap. So we'll pick up after the break, George.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing a post-retirement career to give back, to give meaning and purpose. John, in our last break, you suggested that the idea of a career being something bigger than a paycheck is a worthy thought for a boomer, but also for a 30-something career seeker.
That's right, Evan. We can truly choose a post-retirement career as well as an occupation which provides sufficient income, stability, vacation perks, and still make a difference. And that's because our team has a working knowledge of over 90,000 careers, and many of those fit that description.
Well, John, why wouldn't everyone want meaning and purpose?
Well, unfortunately, many of us have not considered that final layer of preference for our retirement or our present work life. We kind of get caught up in the trap of staying employed and reading all the How to Succeed, Move Up the Ladder books and blogs. Many of those helps are valid, but they may not be the best for everyone.
Well, John, for the next break, could you give us some examples of the difference between grinding out a job and finding a career which provides meaning and purpose, even for someone like a boomer?
Sure, let's do it.
Thanks, John. If you just turned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
We're back to our broadcast, and we're talking today about understanding the challenging labor market, the threats and the opportunities. And we're moving quickly to the job seeker questions that we've received. My co-host guest today is George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio on our website. George, any closing comments that you have on giving our listener that boost of encouragement and positive motivation to move ahead and be one of the 5%, as opposed to being stuck in a rut, hating the job, and fearing the consequences of all this turmoil that's going on in the labor market?
Sure. I think everybody should understand that we all have talents. We all have natural strengths that will be recognized and rewarded in the workplace. We can be motivate us as well. And it's really our responsibility to correlate our natural strengths with the kinds of jobs that require our talents as core job duties and that match with our motivations. And when we have clarity about the kinds of jobs we're suited for, that fosters the confidence we need to move forward, to build the momentum we need to go out into the workplace and find that job. And it's not just a question of looking for postings and then sending off resumes. That conventional form of job search is not really what we're talking about here, but a much more proactive job search where you seek out opportunities for work that matches your strength and go after them in a proactive manner. And we'll talk about that a little bit here. And we've got lots of examples that we can start with from job seeker questions, John.
Yeah, well, let's jump into those, George. And have you got some for us to talk about here?
I do. This first one is from Greg in Portland. It speaks to one of the trends that we talked about employers valuing older workers in this new economy. Greg says, I am a retired department director with the U.S. government. How can I get a non-government job without prior experience?
Ooh, okay. So to even widen that picture, someone that is retired and they've got a label, they are known as an electrician or a museum director or a vice president of finance, and how can they get a new job in something they've never done? Well, Greg obviously needs to identify two major things to find that new place. First, Greg needs to understand that he has a motivation and a passion to do something with his life, something that has significance and value. And that leads Greg to identify a type of company or nonprofit that matches those values. A hospital, for example, is appealing to people that have an interest in medical issues and want to help people that are sick or dying or infirmed. They want to be part of that giving back, that contribution. Now, the second part to that is that Greg needs to identify job duties, a job title, that fits how Greg is wired. And since he does not want to be labeled by his prior employment with the U.S. government, Greg is going to have to boil down his competencies into transferable terms of things he can do, the writing, the problem solving, the creating, the managing, and so forth, has to be reconfigured into a job title that would fit this proverbial hospital setting or another setting. At that point, then Greg needs to begin starting relationships with these new employers, not with a resume, but in a intelligent professional discussion to explore where the future is in those industries. Now, that's kind of the big picture overview. George, take it from there.
Yes, I would suggest that an obvious or logical place for Greg to work is that big government works with big unions and big companies. When you think about the largest companies that service government, their clients. If a company has a client that's government, they're often big themselves. They tend to mirror the same kind of culture as government. They have the same large systems and processes. They're process-driven. So there are Fortune 500 companies in the private sector. There are nonprofit organizations that are large that mirror the structure and processes of government. So that's an obvious place for Greg to look. Look at big business, big unions, big nonprofits that have similar environments, similar cultures, because his experience as a director in a U.S. government agency or department will be valued in the same kind of environment where you're dealing with systems and processes and large numbers of personnel and so on. So I think his chances of getting a job by targeting organizations that are similar in structure and nature to the kind of place he worked in the U.S. government gives him a good opportunity, gives him plenty of opportunities. And then, as you said, to drill down specifically to the job titles and the job duties that he wants to perform, that he on a regular and frequent basis, so that he can be very specific. But I agree with you; it's not a question of a job title with a resume, correlating it with a resume, but really getting out there and talking to people and talking to peers, people that are facing similar challenges in these organizations that he faced in the government, because those are the people that will recognize his value.
Yeah, and what we're saying is something no more complicated than asking a handful of friends and professional contacts, who do you know in that type of company or nonprofit that Greg would be interested in, and then meeting with that person to better understand the culture, the future, and the issues related to growth or change. Opportunity for new jobs is a brother to the word growth. And so if you know a actual company or nonprofit is growing, then you know they're going to be hiring. Those two go together. If you know an organization is changing for whatever reason, there's going to be some restructuring. If you know an organization is opening up a new branch office, well, that one's almost a no-brainer. We know that. There's going to be opportunity there. Well, the rest of the world knows about that. You're going to be competing with them. Understanding what the trends are as far as growth is concerned is a huge advantage for the job seeker, especially one who is trying to change their career direction, do something different. Greg, or Doug, How about another one?
Yes.
Doug. It's George. Yeah. I got
that's
Doug
right.
on my mind today.
That's all right, John. This next question speaks directly to the point you just made. This is from Josh in California. I'm a dentist, 5 years out of dental school, and would like to work in a small family practice office in a specific area. How do I find a practice that might need an associate dentist but hasn't advertised for one?
Oh, there we go. This is beautiful. Well, what Josh is saying, I need to find the hidden jobs because it sounds like he every day goes to the listings that ask for associate dentists. And we know that dental practices, the last resort they go to find a new dentist is to post a vacancy because by posting, the whole world now is going to be at one's doorstep. And the employer has to plow through and make sure they're safe individuals that fit the work culture. It's much better to get a referral. So the very first place Josh has to go to is the dental association for the geographic area that he wants to go to and start a relationship or warm up the relationship with the dental association president and the board members. Now, we're assuming that Josh is a member of the dental association. If he's not, he better get on it right now. Another place that Josh may not have thought of would be the five leading dental laboratories where dental offices send their, what they call their cases. So this would be your Crowns and your Bridges. Every day, dental offices are sending that information to a dental lab that builds the new teeth or the new fixture, the new appliance. And then that comes back to the dental office. These dental labs are intimately acquainted with how dental practices go and their health and their need for additional personnel. So I think those two places would be where to get the pulse beat of this kind of opportunity that Josh is talking about. That isn't to say it's not to view the vacancy postings, but should only be about 20% of the effort to do that, and 80% of the effort is to go out and learn about dental practices through these other resources. George, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't have anything to add to that. I love your tip on reverse engineering, you know, to move backwards from the dental lab to find the labs that are growing, that are busy, that might need help. I think that's just a great tip and worth its weight in gold. Let's move to another question just before the break, because perhaps we can answer it more fully after the break. But this is from George in Fairbanks, Alaska. Boy, we've got listeners from far and wide, don't we, John?
Yeah.
He says that his brother, my brother has a PhD and has not been working for 5 years. He is suffering from deep depression and is now living in his car. What can he do to get a job? Now, this is a sad story, without a doubt, and he's in a very difficult place. I've worked with many PhDs over the years, and of course, they're the kind of person that expects their PhD to be to open doors, that they won't have to look for work. They haven't really acquired job search skills. They never expect to. They feel that if they send out a resume, people will want them because they've got a PhD. And that has been the case for decades. But in this economy, even PhDs go unemployed. And if they're not prepared for job search and they face rejection by sending out their resume, it can hurt. And some of them do fall into depression. Maybe not directly related to their job search. I'm sure it contributes to it. There might be many factors going on here, but let's pick up this question when we come back.
Right, George. Let's pick it up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can choose to find meaning and purpose in a post-retirement career as well as a new 30-something job. John, you started this discussion saying that boomers are now free to choose to pursue something fulfilling, to give back.
That's right, Evan.
And then I ask, why can't a 30-something person make that choice? And you said they could. They just had to be intentional to add that third layer of purpose rather than just the paycheck. So here's my question. Can you give us an example of someone who has done this?
Well, Evan, I recall a client who worked for the same employer for 35 years as a director of quality control and manufacturing. There was a change in management, and our client was transitioned out. As he and I began to discuss his next chapter in life, I challenged him to think about pursuing something that felt like he was making a difference, something meaningful to him.
So this was a real person?
Yes, it was a real person. Let's call him Phil. He had 1 year of community college and felt like his life wouldn't really amount to much. All he thought he could do was find a similar job and then after a few more years retire, buy a big motor home, and drive coast to coast.
I've seen a few of those.
Well, as we began to explore Phil's aptitude assessment results, he pointed to a couple of the printout options and said, "You know, I always wanted to do something for troubled kids, for teenagers."
So what happened?
A long story short, he got hired by a county government agency to administrate the placement of foster teens in good homes.
Did he have some prior experience to get that?
Not at all. We helped him plan a strategy after he met the person who had his job.
You mean he first looked at several careers you suggested, then chose this one because of the on-site validation visit?
That's right. And in his job search, he bypassed many who had four-year college degrees and even graduate school degrees. And you know, Phil had only 1 year of community college with no prior experience.
Well, I think I'm speaking for our listening audience when I say that this is a great example, and I wish we had time to find out how you helped him do it.
Yes, that's true, Evan, but then that is what these job seeker broadcasts are all about. I am sharing the same things I taught Phil, all these lessons learned, and he did it, and it worked for him.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And here we are at the final quarter of our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest co-host is George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. And George is one of our preferred counselors featured on our website. You can see George's picture and bio. Just click on our website. You'll see his smiling face and his very, very impressive credentials. George, just before the break, you read a job seeker question about George in Fairbanks, Alaska. He has a brother that's has a PhD and has not been working and is living in his car. Boy, this is a sad story. And your response was just cut off during the break. Did you want to add some more things before I take a shot at it as well?
Yes, obviously this is a complicated and difficult case, maybe beyond the resources that we can deal with here. But let me say that I think for somebody who's been unemployed for 5 years, is in depression and living in his car, there's two things to consider. He needs to get out of his car and fill his rice bowl. He needs to at least get himself into a stable living situation. And then he needs to, I think, learn how to job search. He needs to acquire the skill of job search so that he can get the kind of job that he's trained for and that he previously worked in. But first he needs to get stabilized, and then he needs to learn job search skills. Obviously, he's capable of learning new skills because he's got a PhD. And let's face it, PhDs shouldn't be unemployed. Our country needs them. Our economy needs them, so their chances of getting employment are very good. But just by sending out resumes, it may not cut it. He may need to learn some proactive job search skills.
Yeah. Well, the thing, having had clients in this context, I can say to George, is because we're talking to the brother who is healthy and employed theoretically, this is not going to be a surefire 3 to 6 month turnaround. The big factor that does not allow us to be standing on firm ground is this deep depression. And so this depression is really almost of the same negative impact as drug addiction, alcoholism. This is something that every day undermines George's ability to get up and pull himself up by his bootstraps. If George were to go to a job interview, and let's assume that he could clean up and have a fresh suit of clothes to wear and talk intelligently even after 5 years of unemployment, if the interview didn't go well or there was no follow-up, George would even be in a worse situation because, quote, he tried and it wasn't quite good enough. Look at me, I'm a failure, and so on. So there needs to be treatment for the depression. It needs to be both medically treated and also with a competent therapist that understands how to deal with depression. Now, my counsel to individuals that have taken that initial step, okay, we're getting some therapy and we're getting some medication, they're going to reverse this depression trend. We need to convince the brother that it's going to take steps, one step at a time, to get him back to the credibility and dignity and honor that his PhD so provides. It's not going to be a jump right into it. And so he's going to have to work his way into it. So employment is going to be part of the therapy. And not the employment is not just a source of income, but establishing a new routine of going to work, relating to people, getting a job done that has meaning and purpose, and then moving on. So there are going to have to be tasks that George's brother is going to do that have a sense of meaning and purpose, but they won't be at that PhD level as of yet. And that's how I would prescribe this.
All right, very good. Yes, he needs to rebuild some stability in his life, without a doubt.
Yeah, we're talking, maybe a two-year process.
Sure.
The other thing that he might do that I think would be very positive, if he has a PhD, that means he likes school. And so what the brother might do is he might go back to classes at a community college to learn some rudimentary job skills and something different just to be able to land meaningful work. And the fact that he's going to class would be part of the therapy because he's doing something he's good at, i.e. going to class. And then he's doing an internship, a practicum, a field experience to complement his classwork. And now we've got this ball rolling in the right direction.
Sure. He needs a program of vocational rehabilitation.
There you go. Right. That's exactly right. Voc rehab is exactly what he needs.
All right. Let's leave George in Fairbanks and move to Jay in Santa Barbara. This is an interesting question. Jay says, I'm thinking of looking for freelance work instead of job hunting. Is that a good option until the economy approves?
Well, that's...
What's the difference between looking for freelance work and job hunting, John?
George, I get this a lot. I don't know if you get this, but I do get this kind of question. And, my assumption would be freelance work would be another way of saying consulting, so that they're not looking for a full-time 12 months a year job, they're looking for more short-term work in their area of expertise. So let's take that definition as our assumption. So is it easier to get something that's more short-term? I have an IT job and I'm unemployed, and what about just taking some short-term employment? Well, one of the things that has done very well in this negative economy are the temp work agencies. And what they've done is they've assisted individuals in getting these more short-term 3-day, 3-week, 3-month work contracts. And sometimes those things do lead to full-time employment. And so I would say that Jay's idea is a good one, as long as he's going to get the cooperation of a temp agency to place him. And so all he has to do is go to 5 temp agencies and see how quickly, if they don't line something up with him for within a week, then he has his answer, this is not a good idea. Because if they can't land something for him, he is certainly going to have, he's up against the same problem in trying to do that himself. George, what's your take?
I agree with you. I often counsel my clients to pick up the yellow pages, look under staffing agencies or employment agencies. They all have big ads there. They tell you the kinds of jobs they place. Call a half a dozen of them. Tell them the kind of job you're looking for and ask them if they have any assignments that might be suitable for you. Because you will learn very quickly whether there's a demand for your skill set locally, because agencies are brokers. They put buyers and sellers of labor together. So there has to be a demand from the buyers of labor, from the employer side, for your particular skill set. And if there is a demand, then the agencies will tell you. They will start screening you, questioning you, to find out if you're competent, reliable, dependable, what your background is with those skills. Do you have a track record? Because they're checking you out to decide if they can place you with one of their
right.
clients and start billing you out and making some money off you. So you don't just have to visit them. That's always a great idea to make the personal contact. But you can just phone them and see if there's a demand for your skill set in your local area.
Yeah. And I would say in putting the resume together, that's going to be very, very important with the skills. George, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you so much.
Time flies by, John.
And so that brings to a close our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group, and he's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. And John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.